the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Jared. Why are we here, Phil?
We are here, Phil, to talk about the world's greatest disasters. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
And remember, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates in some of these disasters. We're literally just interested in finding out what went wrong. And be honest, like, if it came on the news, you'd be interested, wouldn't you?
I'm so interested.
What are we talking about this week, Phil?
We are talking about the volcanic eruption at Pompeii.
Mount Vesuvius. These days, it's a great tourist attraction. For 24 years, Vesuvius has been peaceful, a place to visit and wonder at. But all around is evidence of times past, when the mighty volcano roared and spat out death-bringing tons of molten rock, which formed rivers of lava. Villages in the path of the fiery lava were engulfed. It was a catastrophe of gigantic proportions. The molten lava flowed like a huge tidal wave. It was an incident such as this which smothered ancient Pompeii.
Pompeii? You've been to Pompeii, haven't you?
I have, yes, about 4 years ago.
Was it good?
It was fascinating. I was only there an afternoon, nowhere near long enough.
No.
You could see only a bit of it. But yeah, absolutely awesome. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of human beings there, crowds.
Yeah, is it really busy?
Very, very busy. But it's such a big place.
How big is it?
Oh, yeah, it's huge. Like, imagine St. Albans
just
got covered in ash.
Ooh, lovely.
And then they uncovered the ash.
Yeah. And all the middle-class crap was there, perfectly preserved. Oh, look, there's a Le Creuset frying pan that was just being used.
Yeah. So there's loads of people, loads of human beings.
Yeah, which
obviously
you don't like massively.
I don't like crowds at all.
Yeah.
But because you're essentially walking around a mid-sized town, it's all right.
It's got to be one of the biggest tourist attractions in the world.
I think it is, I think it is. Because it's so unique.
Really busy.
Apart from the other one, very similar to it just down the road, it's totally unique.
Totally unique, yeah. But there isn't anywhere else, is there?
Apart from the little one just down the road.
In that area, because that's the same volcano, isn't it, I guess?
Yes, yes.
But there isn't anywhere else.
No, it's the best preserved Roman city anywhere, apart from possibly the one down the road. Herculaneum. Not been there, want to go there. Arguably slightly better preserved.
Why is that then?
Not been excavated as much.
Or robbed from, I suppose.
Or robbed from, but it was buried in a lot more ash because it was a lot nearer the volcano, so harder to excavate.
Well, why isn't that more famous then?
Well, you know, it's like everyone thinks, you know, what's the story, but I still think Be Here Now is a very good album.
When did it happen?
24th of August, AD 79.
How many people died?
Well, it's unknown, but it is estimated to be about 13,000, okay? To date, the remains of about 1,100 people have been found.
Wow.
That is 361 Hindenburgs.
Wow, that's a lot of Hindenburgs. Mm. And dying in the similar way to the Hindenburg, isn't it? Being incinerated
to death.
Sort
of similar,
really.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you thought the Hindenburg was bad. This is, in a very real sense, 361 times worse than the Hindenburg.
Yeah.
Pompeii was an ancient Roman city near Naples, Italy. It was a popular holiday resort for rich Romans who came to spend their holidays there. And I love this, because before the old eruption, it was a lot nearer to the sea than it is now. I mean, that's immense, isn't it?
That's incredible,
yeah. They say people used to go to Slough to go to the seaside before quite an intense natural disaster put it quite significantly inland.
I used to live in Slough.
Did you? What's it like?
I spent 7 years. It gets a bad rap. I think it's a lot better than people give it credit for.
To be fair, I've never ever been.
It used to have a wonderful brutalist bus station, but they knocked it down.
The reason people think it's crap, I guess, is because it's such a horrible name.
Yeah, horrible name, Betjeman poem, and then the big final kick comes in with The Office.
Oh, it's friendly bombs can rain on Slough.
The irony there is that the Slough that John Betjeman was describing is nothing like the Slough today.
Yeah.
You know, the Slough he was describing is probably quite nice by today's comparison. It's probably a bit like a sort of 1930s Garden City.
With
a few sort of industrial estates on the outskirts. The Slough now, if he were alive today, he'd be turning in his grave.
Wow. Mm. Oh, okay. It was buried under 4 to 6 metres of volcanic ash and pumice during the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in AD 79. So lots of people very, very...
You're trying to crack a lovely feet joke, aren't
I am,
you?
I am. I might not bother. Many of the inhabitants were buried before they could escape.
Mm.
The excavated city offers a snapshot of Roman life in the first century, frozen at the moment it was buried on the 24th of August, AD 79. The forum, the baths, many houses and some out-of-town villas remain well-preserved. So what's preserved?
Sex and filth.
Mainly sex and filth.
There's a lot of sex and filth. Now, what's preserved? There's so much. Streets, buildings, villas, baths. Imagine like a really quite modern town with no electricity or wood. Absolutely fascinating place. Frescoes on walls, paintings, signs, sinks. Some of the piping for the underground heating they used in the expensive Roman villas is all there. There's loads of stuff.
Are there,
and
like,
that's to say nothing of the bodies. And it's that sort of stuff, there's loads of vases, things like that. I saw a sculpture of the Greek god Pan fucking a goat.
Wow. Okay. A sculpture as
a
well.
A sculpture.
How high? Lifelike?
No, it was probably only a couple of feet. Well, maybe a foot and a half.
How anatomically correct is it, if you see what I mean? I mean, is it like, you know, stylized? Is it like a Simpsons image of Pan?
Oh, no, it's pretty...
Or is it like, you know...
No, I mean, that was a realistic-looking goat. And I would imagine if you were to think, what would Pan, the Greek god, look like realistically, it would have been quite a good... it was good.
Okay.
Honestly, seriously, cocks everywhere.
Really?
I mean, there's a lot more to talk about than Pompeii than sex.
Yeah.
But sex is...
Just seem like a big part of it, right?
Big part of it. Well, that's what I took away from it.
Yes.
I think there was some amphitheatres.
In fact, there was a bit of culture, I imagine.
Yeah, the screwed up dog.
I think it's quite cool, though, that it's all cocks. Because it's like it's the most preserved place. It's really amazing and all the rest of it. And you think you find something out about the human condition, you know, 2,000 years ago, what were we like? And then you look at it and go, oh, no, it's exactly the same.
Oh, yeah, they're just bagging each other into oblivion.
Yeah, just it's basically, I mean, I suppose their frescoes are like the internet, right?
Yeah.
Like, we must have been amazed when they were like, do you know what? We've got this thing you can paint on. Mm. Really? Whack a cock on it.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what human beings do, isn't it?
Yeah.
The second you can whack a cock on it, whack a cock on it.
You do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right.
Tell me about Mount Vesuvius then, Phil. Basically what happened is Mount Vesuvius erupted and killed a whole shitload of people.
Mount Vesuvius is an active volcano that sits in the Gulf of Naples about 6 miles from that city.
Is it still active?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very, really? yeah, very much active. I mean... They still think there's a chance it will go off at some point in the future. So this volcano is actually quite huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it. It dominates
you know,
everywhere around it. It's huge. It's every time they try and measure it, every now and again it blows its top again. So the height of it has changed over the years. But when it was last properly measured in 2010, it was 1,281 metres tall. Now, that is about as high as Ben Nevis.
Oh, okay.
Or about 723 Gary Linekers.
Yeah.
The Romans,
yep.
They considered the volcano divine.
Okay.
Look how that paid them back.
It's a weird thing about human beings, isn't it? It's like you believe in God, and then something really horrific will happen that you would think would make human beings go, well, there's obviously no God, look at what they did. Mm. But it just makes people believe in God even more.
He was angry.
Either go, he was angry, or they think it's God's will that the people who survived, survived. They go, I want to thank God for surviving that horrific thing that happened to me. But no one ever seems to blame God for the fact that their house is gone, their friends are dead.
Too risky, isn't it?
What that really taught me is that there's obviously no God because everything I worked for was gone.
Before the eruption of AD 79, there was not even a word for volcano. So the Pompeii people worshipped this as a divine thing, this mountain. But it was kind of a mountain. They didn't really know what a volcano was.
So does the word volcano come from Pompeii, really?
Yeah, it derives from the word Vulcan, who's the Roman god of fire and metal forgery.
Pointy ears, of course.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Of course, Vesuvius is best known for the eruption of AD 79 that led to the burying and destruction of Pompeii, which is what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
The eruption itself ejected a cloud of stones, ashes and volcanic gases to a height of, get this, 21 miles.
That's space, isn't it?
No, space is about 60, but it's still...
Still high.
Bloody, you would think a plane flies about a mile, isn't it? A mile high. The thing now, this is what blew my mind. The thermal energy released was 100,000 times of that released by the Hiroshima Nagasaki bombings.
Right? Shit off.
Yeah. Now, I have no idea what that means. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you say anything about the atomic bomb on Hiroshima... Yeah, and you imagine that.
Yeah.
And then you times that thing by a few hundred thousand, you know you're talking about some powerful shit.
Yeah.
Today, Vesuvius is regarded as one of the most dangerous volcanoes in the world because of the population of about 3 million that live nearby in Naples and the surrounding cities. So it's actually one of the most densely populated volcanic regions in the world. But if you have ever been to Naples, though, there is an argument to be made that if you could put any modern city in the path of a potentially catastrophic natural disaster, Naples is not a bad choice. A lot of crime.
Okay, the AD 79 eruption was preceded by a powerful earthquake 17 years before, which caused widespread destruction around the Bay of Naples. Some of the damage had still not been repaired when the proper disaster happened. 17 years, that's a long time to leave things unrepaired, isn't it?
You know, too much sex going on.
You know, would you waiting for your kids to go to university or something before you start nailing the windows back up? Like, that's pre-eruption that caused the deaths of 600 sheep from tainted air.
Tainted air. Tainted air sounds like something I would suffer from when millennials start talking about politics or social justice.
Yes, it does sound like that. The main eruption lasted for 2 days. Wow. So it was erupting for 2 days.
That's a lot, isn't it?
It's too long for an eruption. For an eruption, I think a morning. You know, it's really, really over.
You see an earthquake, don't you? You get, there's your big one, a few aftershocks, let's get back to normal.
So, on the morning of the first day, August the 22nd, all was pretty normal in Pompeii. Mm-hmm. Lots of people having sex with each other, drawing cocks on things, having sex with goats. Normal in Pompeii. Then, at 1 p.m, Vesuvius violently erupted, Phil. Spewed a high-altitude column from which ash and pumice began to fall. Ooh. Imagine how fucking terrifying that would be. A column.
Yeah.
Like, not like bubbling over the side, but like a pissing column into 21 miles into the sky.
And at that point, you didn't even know what a volcano was.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it?
Jesus.
So you've got to go from, you know, having sex with a goat, right, to looking up, seeing the most gigantic, terrifying thing you've ever seen in your life, and then running away from the most horrific death you could possibly imagine.
All, not knowing what any of it was.
Yeah, all in the space of a number of seconds, I should imagine. God bless him, Jesus Christ, what a killer. A high-altitude column from which ash and pumice began to fall, blanketing the area. At its peak, Vesuvius was spewing 1.5 million tonnes per second.
Wow.
And about 8 feet of pumice rained down on Pompeii. 8 feet of pumice, so taller than everybody. So you're drowning in pumice.
I mean, I can only relate to it, to those little triangular things you do your feet with in the 70s in the bath.
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah. Like, how many branches of lush is that? I mean, shitloads.
Yeah. And I mean, a million and a half tonnes, I can't. I mean, I know a coach is 6 tonnes.
Jesus Christ.
A bus or a coach is about 6 tonnes. So God knows what 1.5 million tonne. I mean, I know we've got figures here, but it is incomprehensible.
I think it's incomprehensible. Mm. The pumice was like hail.
Oh, jeez.
Burning hail.
Oh, my God.
Most of Pompeii's residents, I like this bit, most of Pompeii's residents left during this part of the event. I think that if you were at any
That's
event
a good call.
And it started raining burning pumice, you'd go, should we get a drink? Yeah. Some residents were killed when their roofs collapsed under the weight of the pumice, but most of the 2,000 people uncovered during the excavations were found above this layer of pumice, indicating that they survived this part of the onslaught. So what were they on top of it? So it can't have been that hot if they were able to get on top of it.
Well, I suppose if you've got stuff raining down on you, there's a chance that by law of averages, some people will not have stuff raining on them.
I suppose,
and I suppose the heat is probably at that point very much condensed within the stuff raining down.
Yeah, I guess
rather than the whole area big. So I guess it's possible.
Yeah,
and scientific evidence here has proven that.
And if you're getting on top of things, you can maybe avoid it for a little while. The next phase of the eruption was more devastating. At some time in the night or early the next day, August the 23rd, pyroclastic flows and pyroclastic surges began. What in the name of tits were they?
Well, a pyroclastic flow is a fast-moving current of hot gas and volcanic matter that moves away from a volcano at about 60 miles an hour on average. Now, it's hard to give an example, but imagine, but do you remember when the Twin Towers came down?
Yeah.
And the people watched it standing in the road, and then they see the debris and the gas coming down. That kind of effect.
Oh, I see.
You know, that sort of thing. Now, the only problem here is that the gases can reach temperatures of about 1,000 degrees centigrade.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So it's like a mega boiling dust cloud.
Dust cloud and ash and volcanic matter coming towards you. And then you link that with a pyroclastic surge, okay, which is similar to a flow, but this contains a much higher ratio of gas to rock, less of the pumice and more of the gas, which makes it more turbulent. Yeah. Lighter and able to go over ridges and hills rather always travel down one sort of set path.
So that shit can chase you?
Essentially, yeah, can go over, under.
So this is people running away from...
almost like a flow, like a not a lava flow, but something that is coming in a direction. But when it hits barriers, it just goes over them, under them, in them, through them.
So it's not like a cloud of dust that you put. It's a cloud of molten rock coming towards mm-hmm. you and gas and incredible temperature at 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
You've got those two things together.
Yeah.
So these flows and surges were obviously very, very fast, very, very dense, phenomenally hot, and they knock down pretty much all the structures within their path, incinerating or suffocating all the population that survived the initial sort of hailstorms. And, of course, the knock-on effect altering the landscape and the coastline forever. So you've got all of that, and then you add the additional tremors, which created a mild tsunami in the Bay of Naples.
I think you'd have been quite grateful for a mild tsunami at that point, wouldn't you?
Colder, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Although, of course, it did actually heat the sea up as well.
Oh, okay, that's true. So boiling water. a tidal wave of boiling water is what you're telling me now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But by the evening of the second day, the eruption was over, leaving only a haze in the atmosphere.
They must have thought it was God being angry, because it seems like such a godlike occurrence,
what
doesn't it?
What else could you think it was?
You just thought that the world was... Because you've got no idea of the wider world. I mean, the Romans had a better idea of the wider world than most people, I suppose. Mm. But because you've got no idea of the wider world, it would feel like the entire world was ending.
Mm. But as I say, and I'll keep going back to this, they didn't know what a volcano was.
Yeah, that's insane.
So that's even more. You could, if you thought it was divine anyway,
yeah,
and then it goes and does that to you, I mean, that is God, isn't it?
Yeah, that's everything you would think of as a God being angry with you.
It still might be.
Nah, it's not.
Okay. So that, Phil, is a pyroclastic flow and a pyroclastic surge.
So that means that the eruption occurs in two phases, doesn't it? I suppose the first one, the main eruption, lasted for 18 hours. 18 hours.
My God.
And produced a fall of pumice and ashes over Pompeii to a depth of about, like we said, 8 feet, 9.2 feet. So overhead height. The second phase, where the surges that engulfed Pompeii, burning and asphyxiating any living beings who happened to be remained behind. The lava flooded the city at a speed of 68 miles per hour, which is about the same speed as a 20-year-old driving in a 30 miles an hour zone.
But it's about the same speed, yeah.
The thing that gets me about that is it's so much faster than a human being can run.
Yeah. Right?
Or a horse can gallop. Mm. And the thing that gets me about is, you remember the Asian tsunami?
Mm.
So you remember the pictures of the water coming up the beach? Mm. There's a high shot.
Yeah.
And there's a man on the beach and the water's coming towards him and the water is going faster than he knows he can run. Mm. And so you don't really see, but there is a moment of resignation in that man who's like, well, there's no point in me running away from it. So he just stands and waits and it gets him. And that's what we're dealing with here, I suppose, is it's a lava flow going at a speed that you can't outrun. So you're just... There would be nothing you could do. No. No reason to run. No reason to do anything. You couldn't get on top of anything. It's too high. It's going too fast. I suppose by the time it gets close to you, you're dead.
I don't know. Would the heat get you before the actual flows and surges? Or?
Well, I guess all this gas would. Yeah. Like the gas and the heating. Maybe that would get you before the actual lava rolled over you.
God, it's just a clusterfuck of horror,
isn't it?
It's
a really horrific thing. Most scientific research today leads us to believe that most of the population were almost instantly killed by your heat during the waves of pyroclastic flows and surges. So hopefully most people were incinerated early on.
Before they knew, had much knowledge of...
Yeah. So maybe nobody saw the lava rolling towards them. No. They were still far gone by that time. It is believed that the flows were enough to raise the temperature of the air to around 300 centigrade. Killing people in an instant.
Oh,
that's good though, right? I want to be killed in an instant.
I guess so, but I suppose they had a good few hours of eruption beforehand, so they're not going to be calm and then bang, dead. In an instant.
No.
I mean, they will have spent hours absolutely terrified.
Terrified,
but
yeah.
I suppose if the end's going to come, bang, I suppose better.
Yeah, so people were killed in an instant, and scientists believe that is what allowed the poses of the victims and explains the contorted postures of some of them. They were covered either quickly or slowly, depending on their location, by pumice, ash and debris. Ooh. Depends where you are, I suppose.
I guess,
So, I think it's fair to say, pretty freaking horrific one.
Now, the one thing we're very lucky to have with Pompeii was an eyewitness account.
Yeah.
It's from a chap called Pliny the Younger.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Younger. Now, if you're wondering who Pliny the Elder was, don't worry, he died in the volcano.
Oh, brilliant.
But Pliny the Younger, he was a lawyer, he was an author, and he was a magistrate of ancient Rome. And he wrote hundreds of letters during his life, which are of great historical value, obviously. Okay. Because we won't get that now, because we all use emails, so there'll be nothing left.
No, I suppose not. I mean, what
get rid of the servers. No history.
But, I mean, I imagine what's Pliny the Younger writing on? He's writing on parchment or something, is he?
Wow.
I mean, how good is parchment in a volcanic eruption? It's not great, is it?
I suppose not. I suppose you've got a point. Did survive, though, you know?
He must have. Yeah, I suppose he posted it somewhere else, isn't it?
So I'll tell you why it survived. Why? Because he actually wrote the eyewitness account 25 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, nowhere near it. Nowhere near it. Some bloke wrote to him and said, can you tell me what happened when you saw it? And he wrote it all down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, the fact of the matter is, this Pliny the Younger wrote all this down. He was a very rich chap, actually, owned a fair few villas, and was married three times.
Lovely.
Good lad. Now,
you've got to be rich if people would listen to you, haven't you? Like you said, oh, there's an eyewitness account. Oh, is there? Yeah, he's a donkey trader. Is he? Fuck him. You've got to be rich, haven't you, before anybody listens to you. Like if you've got money, then like you're a diarist, aren't you? If you haven't got money, you're just a bastard.
But if you go to a dentist, and he's got a kind of plucky arrogance of public school, you're going to trust him more.
That's
and
true,
some bloke
I suppose.
Goes, all right, mate, I'm Keith. Today I'm going to take out your top molar and then we'll have a look at your gums.
We're down your molars, mate. Don't worry, mate. Yeah, you're right. So there's a lot of things like that, isn't it? It's terrible, really. It's prejudice. Like, pilots have to be posh, don't they? Pilots.
Thank
doctors.
Goodness.
Bad, isn't it?
So let me give you an example from Pliny the Younger's observations.
The sea seemed to roll back upon itself and to be driven from its banks by the convulsive motion of the earth. On the other side, a black and dreadful cloud, broken with rapid zigzag flashes, revealed behind it variously shaped masses of flame. These last were like sheet lightning, but much larger. Soon afterwards, the cloud began to descend and cover the sea. The ashes now began to fall upon us. I looked back. A dense, dark mist seemed to be following us, spreading itself over the country like a cloud. We had scarcely sat down when night came upon us. Not such as we have when the sky is cloudy, or when there is no moon, but that of a room when it is shut up, and all the lights put out. You might hear the shrieks of women, the screams of children, and the shouts of men, some calling for their children, others for their parents, others for their husbands, one lamenting his own fate, another that of his family, some wishing to die from the very fear of dying, some lifting their hands to the gods. But the greater part convinced that there were now no gods at all.
Winnie the Pooh, it ain't.
Normally, after a natural disaster, cities are rebuilt, aren't they?
Are we doing an aftermath here, Phil? Is that what's happening?
Yes, I'm carrying on with the podcast.
Oh, I see. You can carry on.
Normally, after a natural disaster, cities are rebuilt.
You said that.
I know, but you interrupted.
Yeah,
so
what I'm actually deliberately making it annoying for you now.
Why is that?
I don't know, because I'm being a bastard, but now I'm going to stop.
Okay. Normally, after a natural disaster, cities are rebuilt. Like, for example, they keep on building San Francisco, don't they, over and over again? Just keep building on it, mate.
Dresden. Not a natural disaster, but a disaster.
Edinburgh, it's not even a natural disaster. Just keep building on the top of it, don't they? Yeah. Trying to make it into like a Rubik's Cube of a city. But that's not the case with Pompeii. Pompeii got covered in ash, and that's how it stayed for a long time. The damage was so extensive and the effect of the tragedy so great that no attempts were made to reoccupy the area.
Not surprised.
How long would it take to cool, though?
God knows. That's a good question.
Very long time to cool.
Yeah.
And you'd have to have a few generations pass before people started stop taking it personally. Wouldn't they?
Personally.
I mean, like...
Well, we did say there was gods. Possibly they thought it was God.
Yeah, that's true. But like I say, like, if you were in a tragedy, that's pretty personal. If your dad was in a tragedy, you know, it's a big part of your life. If granddad saw something horrible, then, like, that's a big part of your life.
Yeah, you're not going to go, I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll go and buy a semi in Lockerbie.
Exactly. Yeah. But who gives a fuck what happened to great-granddad? Who even was that? Do you know who your great-granddad was?
No.
I've got no idea.
No, I know who my granddad was. I know who my great-granddad was by name because I'm on ancestry.co.uk.
Are you? Did he do anything interesting?
Seems not.
Okay. Okay. So, no attempts were made to reoccupy the area. Looters, however, it's always looters first,
always
isn't it?
Always looters.
Tutankhamun. You know, all the Egypt, always looters. Mm. Looters get there first.
Yeah, grubby scum of human life.
Okay.
Sums it up, doesn't it?
Looters did return to Pompeii, digging tunnels through the ash and debris and making away with many of the city's riches. Lots and lots and lots of statues of cocks. Thus proving yet again that so many of our species are absolute scum.
Couldn't agree more, Phil.
Are they scum, though? Because, like, although just, you know, it's a ruin they're going through. It's not like a temple, is it? They're not seeing from, like, a temple or a school or something. They're digging into pumice and ash and finding, like...
Graves.
Old, I suppose the graves part of it is
respect.
Probably bad, isn't it? Yeah, I suppose there's no respect for the incinerated... So, Pompeii was lost and forgotten for about 1,500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Buried under 15 feet of ash.
Yeah, that would make me forget stuff.
Yeah, there's stuff in my flat that's buried under that much dust. Fuck, Jesus Christ, I've got a BMX. Then, in 1599, when digging an underground channel to divert a local river, builders came across some ancient walls covered with paintings and inscriptions. And I love this. Architect Domenico Fontana... who was also a fabulous guitarist.
I was about to say, I really loved his Sunset on the Hillside album.
He was called in.
Okay.
And he unearthed some of the frescoes and had a look at them. Decided they were pornographic.
All right.
And then covered them over again. What a twat.
I've seen it. No one else's.
It's mad that people do that, isn't it? Like I can see why, like, no one really gives a toss about murder or, like, really horrific things. But sex, I was like, nope, no thank you, no thank you, thank you, thank you. Especially in, I suppose, 1599, bit prudish, maybe.
Because that'd be worth millions, what he covered up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's another thing about Machu Picchu. Because you know how Machu Picchu was discovered by the West?
Mm.
Like, he basically just some dude who pulled some leaves back and went, what the fuck is that? But the thing is, he can't have been the first person to do that.
No.
There must have been so many people who have gone, oh, there's a pyramid over there. Don't go that way, there's a pyramid. Something, I don't know. Bullshit. Then, in 1748...
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a little bit closer to enlightenment. A Spanish engineer by the name of Phil?
Roque Joaquim del Alcubierre.
Or something similar, was at Pompeii building a palace for King Charles III. What do we know about King Charles III?
Nothing.
When he too stumbled across the remains of the old Roman city, he found that volcanic ash had acted as a preservative. Weird that, isn't it? Yeah. And it destroyed everything and then preserved what it had destroyed.
It's almost like, say, look upon my works,
ye mighty, and
weep.
And weep, whatever.
Love that.
Basically,
poem.
It's because there's no air or moisture. That's what causes shit to decay in it. Many of the buildings and even the skeletons and remains of city life were still intact. And that's what's really amazing about Pompeii. That's what really turns people on to go in there, doesn't it? Later, in 1863, an Italian archaeologist called Phil...
Giuseppe Fiorelli
took charge of the site and began a proper excavation of it. I think this is amazing to recognise this. He recognised that soft cavities in the ash about 30 feet beneath the surface were actually the outlines of bodies and that had retained their forms despite soft tissue decomposing over time.
Wow, how do you know that?
I would never have thought that, ever. Mm. Because he's looking at the negative space.
Mm.
And he's got no... This is 1863. He's got no technology to work that out. That's literally his brainals doing that.
Yeah, amazing.
How the fuck did he work that out?
I'm speechless.
Okay. So, when he discovered that, he poured liquid plaster into the voids that once held the human or animal bodies. Once the plaster was poured into the ash, it kind of filled out the spaces formerly occupied by the bodies and gave a really accurate recreation of dead people in their last moments. So there's about 1,000 of these casts of people and animals in their last moments on Earth, and you've seen a load of them, I guess.
I have, yeah, I have. There's a section they take you to in Pompeii, and it's just full of, it's just rows upon rows stacked high of pots, pans, various things like that. And then you've just got just people.
Really?
Just lying there.
Really?
Yeah, just a few people knocking around. Yeah. There's a dog that's sort of curled where it died.
Nasty.
You can see that. It's horrible. It's horrible when you look at it. It really.
And it must have been amazing because maybe he didn't know what was in those holes. Because maybe that's more likely. Maybe he went, oh, there's something there. Pour some plaster into it. Pour some plaster in. And then they move the ash away and go, fuck me, that's a corpse. Mm. That's. And then once you've done one, then you're looking for them, aren't you? He's trying to find them.
But this is the weird thing, you see, because most people think that those plaster bodies are empty.
Yeah.
But they're not. The cavities left by the bodies were not just sort of an empty shell. They had the bones of the people in them. So when the plaster filled that soft ash, the bones were all enclosed.
Oh, Jesus.
So the bodies are really lifelike. If you go there, you'll see the bodies have teeth.
Oh, Christ.
And stuff
really?
Like that. And you can see sometimes where the plaster's gone away, you can see like feet, like bones of the feet and stuff. People are not a big part of the tour.
Oh,
I think that's probably a good thing.
Well, they've got 1,000 of them, have they?
But yeah, they're not all there. Some of them are locked away. Some of them are in nearby museums. But there is a little section. There could be more. Because as I say, it's a town you're walking around. We were taken to one little section. I don't think you want to go there to see bodies. I think that would be massively missing out on.
That is what most people are going there for,
do you
though,
think?
Aren't they? I think if people say, I went to Pompeii, the first thing I would say is, like, did you see the bodies? Did you see them? Did you see that?
Oh, I suppose. I mean, I didn't go there for that.
No.
But I suppose in retrospect, if I hadn't seen one,
you'd want to
I'd come away feeling a bit shortchanged.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. you put it like that.
No, we didn't bother. No, we didn't go and see it. No, we went to Lenin's tomb, but we just wanted to look at the ceiling. So it's a horrific thing that happened in Pompeii. So let's finish by talking about the nice thing about Pompeii, which is having sex with each other and that.
Yay! Like I said to you, Phil, when I was there, drawings of cocks, filthy murals, the remains of brothels everywhere. I mean, Soho in the 70s times 50.
Wow.
Oh, God, I saw phallic-shaped lamps. Like I said, I saw the guy fucking a goat. Frescoes of anal and, oh, man, you name it, it was there. In fact, it wasn't just me as well, actually. In 1819, when King Francis I of Naples visited a display of Pompeii artifacts with his wife and daughter, he was so embarrassed by the erotic artwork that he ordered it to be locked away in a secret cabinet accessible only to people of mature age and respected morals.
Why is that? If you've got something like saucy like that, why can only be
saucy?
People, why can only people with morals look at it? Surely people with morals.
Well, they're not going to benefit from it.
They're not going to benefit from it. And you think they wouldn't want to go and look in a secret? Hello, I'm someone with morals. Can I have a look at your porn? It doesn't seem to work, does it? What we've done is we've locked it away so that only perverts can look at it. Because perverts want to look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, everybody wants to look at it.
Of course they do.
Everybody does. It annoys me a bit that we're so like. I don't want people to go out and be having sex on the streets, obviously.
No.
But it does seem like a bit hypocritical, doesn't it? You know, everybody's interested. My mum, your mum, everybody is interested in looking at these ancient saucy pictures.
I suppose it depends what level of corruption the people feel that will happen because of it. No. I don't think I'm going to get corrupted by a Roman woman tweaking the nipple of another Roman woman in the form of a fresco.
No. No,
I mean, it's been on my wall 10 years and it's never done anything wrong to me.
Exactly.
So this secret cabinet was only finally reopened in 2000. So
bloody
that's
hell.
Like 200 years later. And to this day, children are only allowed to see the contents in the presence of a guardian or with written permission.
Bloody hell.
Love that. Dear Mr. Museum Curator, can I come and have a look at the naughty pictures of all the dead Romans?
Yes, you can. Thank you. Come here at 2 p.m. on the 13th of August. You can come and look at the dirty porn.
The thing I like about this as well is it's in the year 2000.
Yeah.
So the internet's already a thing. So
that's true.
Like, it's like, you know,
yeah.
It's saying, you know, I've basically I've finished Pornhub.
Yeah, what's left?
I finished Pornhub. Oh, God, I'm going to have to write to the Pope. It's mad, isn't it?
Oh, it's mad.
I mean, honestly. Yeah. A drawing as well. How bad can a drawing
be? Yeah,
a
drawing. It's not even a photograph. I don't think I could get aroused by a drawing.
I'll tell you what. What I'll do is I'll draw a willy on here.
Mm-hmm.
Not doing anything for you?
Well, that's not bad, actually.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks like you're about to peel a banana, but it's...
One thing I like about a willy... A drawing of a willy is one. A good thing about willy is that way, flaccid willy. Turn the other way around.
Never thought of it like that.
Correct, willy.
Do you always draw them, don't you? You always draw them with the sort of two balls, sort of almost
either
encompassing.
Side,
yeah, it doesn't happen like that. Mine hang down to my knees. Yeah. So, like I say, brothels everywhere, sex everywhere. These brothels, right? As you'd imagine. Loads of filthy murals on them.
Now, this is because it's a seaside town, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
I'm going to say it's not because Romans were just generally boffing each other all the time, although they were.
Mm.
But this is like Brighton, isn't it?
It's, yeah,
like
you it's go heightened.
To the, yeah, it's heightened because you go to the seaside
for and a
you
bit have, of,
for a bit of, you know...
Banging.
Literally like what happens in Brighton and
yeah.
Blackpool and any other sort of seaside town.
Yeah, it's a good time town.
Yeah, it's a good time town. Get off down Pompeii, but stag do's and hen do's.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, it's making me feel like maybe the volcanic eruption was a good thing. Because what it's done really is incinerated a lot of stag and hen do's.
Good, Paul. Wouldn't care if it happened to Magaluf.
No.
So with these murals and stuff, the argument goes that these murals in the brothels, they may have been intended to arouse clients. They may have even acted as pictorial menus or instruction manuals for more inexperienced customers. I don't think they were instruction manuals.
No.
don't think you would look up and you would see titillation going on and going, that's how you do it. I think it's to get you rock
yeah,
hard.
That's the thing. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. It's not going to be like, this is how you have sex with a goat, is
no,
it?
No.
Hi, excuse me. Wondering how you have sex with a goat. Oh, God, it's the 17th time I've been asked that today. We're going to have to draw a picture. Like,
look on the wall,
look
mate.
On the menu. We've done a sex menu on a fresco.
So these brothels, right?
Yeah.
Here's a bit of a sad bit. They actually provide evidence that the women in the brothels worked in cells, usually only big enough for a narrow bed, no windows, limited airflow. And the excavations also suggest that the cells didn't have doors, which implies that many of them were curtained. So prostitutes... Normally slaves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you had slave owners, pimps. It wasn't the big gay everyone's getting on with it and enjoying themselves.
So it's a pretty horrible place when you get the nitty gritty of it, right?
Yeah,
it's like rich Romans are coming down, spending a day at the beach, eating shit, vomiting, you know, and then going and abusing people and drugs. And so really... Horrible, really.
Yeah, just like today, really.
Yeah. Just like today.
Now, the preservation of the graffiti on the walls of Pompeii's buildings is also something that's quite interesting. You see that. That is not only really fascinating, but gives you really good examples of what the sex trade was kind of like in that era, because the graffiti gives you information on specific services or prices or clients' appraisals of certain women.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah. Some of the examples, graffiti, was, you know, some of it, I remember, straight to the point, thrust slowly.
Wow.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Other graffiti examples, advertisement. Eupelia was here with 2,000 beautiful men.
So,
I like the sound of her.
Okay.
Maritimus licks your vulva and is ready to serve virgins. Lucky lad. Or you got list prices. Eupelia, here she is again, love her, sucks for a small fee.
That's good, isn't it, for a small fee.
Small fee.
It's nice to know that she wasn't overpricing. That is mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
We really have not changed.
We've not changed
in the
all,
slightest.
Have we? Yeah.
In the slightest. Mm. Never, ever, never did learn to thrust slowly.
It's just the Roman equivalent of call this number.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's the same shit over and over again. Just different technology.
Yeah. So this is all very interesting, I think, and it's quite funny and all sorts of weird sex stuff goes on. Dirty, dirty Romans. But there is a logic to sort of all of this, right? In Roman life, marriages, yeah, particularly those among the elite classes, were arranged. And they were predominantly done for the birth of male heirs, you know, to keep the family line going.
Right.
So a husband wouldn't seek sexual pleasures from his wife. Rather, out of respect for her, a man would pay for pleasurable sex especially those acts that were not expected to be performed by respectable women.
Right.
So the sex trade kind of operated as a sort of social and moral policing of the institution of marriage. Do you get it?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I get it's an inverted, bizarre kind of
it
logic.
It just makes me think that you can just make anything all right with words, can't you? Yes, I've been having sex with women around the M25, but I did it out of respect for you.
Yeah, I don't think it would cut much mustard nowadays.
I wanted to have some really horrible sex, and I knew you wouldn't like it. And so out of respect for you, yes, you're welcome.
In a similar vein, a very male-dominated society, so a male's reputation and masculinity was seen as very important, so them having sex with loads of prostitutes was considered a good thing. And, of course, sex work was not illegal,
yeah.
As we said, it was structured around slavery. But adultery was actually outlawed. So another reason for paying for sex.
So they don't consider that adultery?
They don't consider adultery. If I've got to be honest with you, this sounds a fantastic society. Not the slave bit. I want nice conditions, well paid, they go home to a nice house.
Right.
But the actual general setup
of like free love, basically, is what you're talking about.
It doesn't sound bad, does it?
Well, I'm not against free love. What I'm thinking about is what is adultery if you can have sex outside of marriage? You can't have sex with another woman who's not a prostitute, basically.
Yeah, what it means is you can't have sex with anyone that you're not paying them for.
See, it doesn't sound... Oh, no, have you been having sex with another woman? It's okay, I'll give her 50 quid. Oh, thank God for... Thank God. Oh, 50 quid you give her? Yeah. Oh, did you have sex vaginally? No, up the bum. Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God.
I mean, I am joking. It's wrong. Of course, it's wrong.
No, wrong. What's
wrong?
Sounds
fun, though, doesn't it?
What is wrong? This is wrong. But what is wrong? I mean, the slavery thing's wrong, right? But I don't think the free love thing's particularly wrong. Is it? Is it?
Well, no, but I will say that scientific research on some of the bodies have found that in Pompeii, children as young as 10 had syphilis.
Yes, that's the thing. Maybe that is wrong.
Yeah, so there's your...
Well, not maybe. That is wrong.
It's wrong, isn't it? It's not right.
Yeah, that's right.
Can I talk about male-to-male encounters in Pompeii?
Of course you can. Yeah.
It was allowed.
Yep.
But there had to be certain protocols, right? A Roman man...
Close the door. Yeah. Put the red sheet over the lamp.
A Roman man could only do the penetrating and not be penetrated.
Oh, okay.
So being penetrated was only for slaves and prostitutes.
Oh, hold on, aren't they all Romans? Who are being penetrated then?
Slaves and prostitutes.
So where are the slaves and prostitutes from?
Well, Roman Empire, didn't they? They put slaves from everywhere.
I guess it's Athens and...
Yeah, there was a lot of Greeks actually living in Pompeii, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So they had lots of slaves.
So they're bumming Greeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you see, the reason why they had this penetration law, why, you know, Romans could be the postman but never the letterbox, was because being penetrated is considered passive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was considered women's work to be passive. So, therefore... Yeah, I know, it's not right, is it?
No.
Therefore, men who submitted
were
considered deficient in virtue.
Yeah.
So they were denounced and reviled as effeminate.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great, does it, either? Because you had this idea that, like, it was all free and, like, that gay sex was fine, but actually, it's not, is it? It's the same old shit.
It's perceived dominance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet shed loads of it went on, though. Yeah. I bet loads of Romans were getting it.
Mm. Right, that was The Destruction of Pompeii. Did you enjoy it, Phil?
Yes, very interesting indeed.
Yeah?
Yes, I like the sex bit.
Yeah. I think of all the disasters we're going to cover, it probably is the sexiest, isn't it? I can't think of another sexy one. We might do the Profumo affair, but like...
Your Profumo affair would be a good one to do.
So, in the final analysis, The Destruction of Pompeii, Phil Lucas, God's fault or our fault?
God's fault.
Very definitely God's fault.
Definitely.
I mean, he may or may not have been punishing them for being A, tall, and B, having sex with literally everything that moved.
Those morals were terrible.
They were bad morals.
Mm.
So, that was The Destruction of Pompeii. What are we doing next time, Phil?
Gerald Ratner.
Excellent.
The 80s jeweller.
Thank you very much for listening to Crash Bang Wallop. If you like this podcast, then please follow us on Twitter and Facebook. What are our Twitter and Facebook handles, Phil?
Twitter handle is @CBWallop. And Facebook, just search for Crush Bang Wallop.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for listening to CB Wallop. We will see you in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye.